Involuntarily, Mark braked the big car almost to a standstill before the white gates. They were tall twin columns, plastered and whitewashed with the Zulu name in raised letters on each. Emoyeni. It was a lovely, haunting name. The place of the wind. And on the crest of the hills above Durban town, it would indeed receive the cool blessing of the sea breezes during the sweltering summer months. The swinging portion of the gate was two racks of heavy cast-iron spears. But they stood open now, and Mark crossed the iron grid, which would prevent hooved animals entering or escaping, and started up the gentle curve of the driveway, butter-yellow flint pebbles carefully raked and freshly watered, set on each side with deep beds of cannas, which were now in full bloom. They had been arranged in banks of solid colour, scarlet and yellow and white, dazzling in the bright sunshine, and beyond them were lush lawns of deep tropical green, mown carpet smooth but studded with clumps of indigenous trees, which had obviously been spared for their size or beauty or unusual shape. They were festooned with garlands of lianas, the ubiquitous monkey rope plants of Natal. And even as Mark watched, a small blue-grey vervet monkey dropped lithely down one of the living ropes, and with its back arched like a cat and its long tail held high in mock alarm, bounded across an open stretch of lawn until it reached the next clump of trees, where it shot to the highest branches and chattered insolently at the slowly passing car. Mark knew from his investigation that this was merely the Courtney townhouse. The main family home was at Ladyburg, and he had not expected anything like this splendour. And yet why not? He grinned wryly. The man had everything in the world. This was a mere pied-à-terre. He twisted his head to look back. The gates were out of sight behind him now, and there was still no sign of the house ahead. He was surrounded by a fantasy landscape, half wild and yet lovingly groomed and tended. And now he saw the reason for the animal grid at the main gates. Small herds of semi-domesticated game cropped at the short grass of the lawn, or stood and watched the passing car with mild curiosity. He saw graceful golden-brown impala, with snowy bellies and spindly back-curved horns, a dainty blue duiker as big as a fox terrier, with pricked-up ears and bright button eyes, an Eland bull with hanging dewlap, thick twisted horns arming the short, heavy head, and a barrel body heavy as a pedigree Africando bull. He crossed a low bridge over the narrow neck of an artificial lake. The blue water lotus blooms stood high above their huge, round green leaves that floated flat on the surface. Their perfume was light and sweet and nostalgic on the bright, warm air, and the dark torpedo shapes of bass hung suspended in the clear water below the sheltering lotus leaves. On the edge of the lake, a black-and-white spur-winged goose spread its wings, as wide as the reach of a man's arms, and pressed forward with snake-like neck and pink wattled head, threatening flight at the intrusion. Then, thinking better of such effort, it furled the great wings again and waggled its tail, satisfied with a single harsh honk of protest as the Cadillac passed. The roof of the house showed through the trees ahead now, and it was tiled in candy pink, towered and turreted and ridged like a Spanish palace. The last curve of the driveway brought Mark out into full view of the building. Before it lay an open expanse of blazing flower beds. The colour was so vibrant and so concentrated that it daunted the eye, and was relieved only by the tall, soft ostrich feathers of spray that poured high into the air from the fountains set in the centre of the four round ponds, parapeted in stone. The breeze blew soft wisps of spray, like smoke, across the flower beds, wetting the blooms and enhancing the already dazzling colour. The house was two stories high, with random towers breaking the solid silhouette and columns twisted like candy sticks. Ornamenting the entrance and supporting the window lintels, it was painted white, and it shone in the sunlight like a block of ice. It should have given the impression of solid size and ostentatious display, but the design was so cunning that it seemed light as a French pastry, a gay and happy house, built in a spirit of fun and probably of love, a rich man's gift to a lovely woman, for the feminine touch was everywhere evident, and the great masses of flowers, the fountains and peacocks and marble statues, seemed right, the only setting for such a structure. Slowly, awed and enchanted, Mark let the Cadillac roll down the last curve of the driveway, and the light, faint cries of female voices caught his attention. The tennis court stood at the end of the lawns, and there were women at play, their white dresses sparkling in the sun, their limbs flashing as they ran and swerved and struck at the ball. Their voices and laughter were sweet and melodious in the warm hush of the tropical mid-morning. Mark left the car and started across the lawn towards the courts. There were other female figures, also white-clad, that lolled in deck chairs in the shade of the banyan trees, watching the play and conversing languidly as they sipped at long frosted glasses, waiting their turn on the courts. None of them noticed Mark until he was on the edge of their group. "Oh, I say, girls," one of them turned quickly in her chair, and appraised Mark with eyes suddenly no longer bored, but clear blue and acquisitive. "A man, we are in luck." Instantly the other three changed, each reacting differently, one exaggerating her indifferent and indolent loll in the low chair, another tugging at her skirt with one hand and pushing at her hair with the other, smiling brightly and sucking in her tummy. They were all young and sleek as cats, glossy with youth and health, and that elusive but unmistakable aura of wealth and breeding. "And what is your pleasure, sir?" asked the one with blue eyes. She was the prettiest of the four, with fine, pale, golden hair in a halo around the small, neat head and good white teeth as she smiled. Mark felt discomforted under their stares, especially when the speaker turned further in her chair, slowly uncrossed and crossed her legs, managing to give Mark a flash of white silk panties under the short skirt. "I'm looking for Miss Storm Courtney." "God," said the smiler, "they all want Storm. Why don't any of them ever want me?" "Storm," the blonde called out to the court. Storm Courtney was about to serve, but the call distracted her and she glanced across. She saw Mark and her expression did not change. Her attention switched back to the game. She threw the ball high and swung overhand at it. The stroke was fluid and controlled. The racket twanged sharply, and the movement threw her white cotton skirt high against the back of her thighs. Her legs were beautifully moulded, slim ankles and gently swelling calves, knees marked only by symmetrical dimples. She spun lightly and caught the return of the ball, a long, lightly tanned arm flashing in a full sweep, and the ball leapt from the racket in a white blur. Again her skirt kicked up, and Mark shifted slightly on his feet, for the earth had tilted again. She ran back to the baseline, short, neat steps on those long, narrow feet, head thrown back to follow the high parabola of the lobbing ball against the blue of the sky. Her dark hair seemed to glow with the metallic sheen of a sunbird's wing as she judged her stroke, and then her whole body went into it, power uncoiling along those long, beautiful legs, driven up from tensed and rounded buttocks under the light cotton skirt, through the narrow waist, along young, hard, black muscles, and exploding down through the swinging right arm. The ball hummed like an arrow, flashed low across the net, and kicked a white puff of dust from the baseline. "Too good," wailed her opponent despairingly, and Storm laughed, gay and triumphant, and came back to the high fence to pick up the spare balls from the gutter. "Oh, Storm, there's a gentleman here to see you," the blonde called again, and Storm flipped up a ball with the tip of her racket and the side of her foot, bouncing it once on the turf of the court and then catching it in her free hand. "Yes, Irene," she answered lightly. "I know, he's only a salesperson. Ask him to wait by the car until I'm ready to deal with him." She had not looked at Mark again, and now she turned away. "40, love," she called gaily, and ran back to the baseline. Her voice had a music and lilt that did nothing to sweeten the sudden flare of anger which made Mark's jaw set grimly. "If you are a salesperson," Irene murmured, "then you can sell me something sometime. But right now, darling, I suggest you do what Storm says, otherwise we'll all know about it." When Storm came to where he waited, she was flanked by the other girls, like maids-in-waiting attending a princess, he thought, and he felt his resentment fade as he watched her. You could forgive somebody like that, somebody so royal and lovely and heart-achingly beautiful. You could forgive them anything. He stood attentive, waiting for her, and he realized then how tall she was. The top of that glossy head reached to his chin, almost. "Good morning, Miss Courtney. I've brought you a new Cadillac, and all of us at Natal Motors wish you much joy and enjoyment." It was a little speech he always used when making a delivery, and he spoke it with all the warmth and charm and sincerity which had made him in so few months the star salesman of Natal Motors. "Where are the keys?" Storm Courtney asked, and for the first time looked at him directly. Mark realized that her eyes were that dark, almost black-blue, like the General's. There was no question who her father was. She opened them a little wider, and in the sunlight they were the colour of polished sapphires, or the blue of the Mozambique current, out in the deep water at noon. "They're in the car," he answered, and his voice sounded strange in his own ears, as though it came from a distance. "Get them," she said. And he felt himself start to move, to hurry to her bidding. Then something like that sense of danger he had known and developed in France warned him. Her expression was neutral, completely unconcerned, as though she found the effort of talking directly to him was wasted, just one of these tiresome moments in an otherwise important march of events. Yet the warning was clear as the chime of a bell in his head, and only then he saw something else move in her eyes, something dangerous and exciting, like the shape of a leopard hunting in the shadows. A challenge, perhaps, a dare. And suddenly he knew clearly that no daughter of Sean Courtney would be reared to such natural arrogance and rudeness. There was a reason, some design in her attitude. He felt a lightness of mind, that kind of special madness which had driven away fear of consequence so often in moments of peril or desperate enterprise, and he grinned at her. He did not have to force the grin. It was natural and devilish and challenging. "Certainly, Miss Courtney, of course I'll get them, just as soon as you say please." There was an audible communal gasp from the girls around her, and they stilled with awed delight, their eyes darting to Storm's face and then back to Mark's.
"Say please to the nice man, Stormy,"
Irene used the patronising voice for instructing young children, and there was a delighted burst of giggles from the others. For one unholy instant something burned in the girl's dark blue eyes, something fierce that was not anger. Mark recognised the importance of that flash. Although he did not truly know the exact emotion it betrayed, yet he knew it might affect him. Then it was gone, and in its place was true unfeigned anger.
"How dare you?"
Storm's voice was low and quivering, but her lips were suddenly frosty white as the blood drained away. The anger was too swift, too strong for the occasion, out of all proportion to the mild exchange, and Mark felt a reckless excitement that he had been able to reach her so deeply. He kept the grin mocking and taunting.
"Hit him, darling,"
Irene teased, and for a moment Mark thought she really might.
"You keep your silly mouth shut, Irene Luchars."
"Ooh la la," Irene gloated. "Tempa."
Mark turned casually away and opened the driver's door of the Cadillac.
"Where are you going?"
"Back to town." He started the engine and looked out of the window at her. There was no doubt now that she was the most beautiful creature he had ever seen. Anger had rouged her cheeks, and the fine dark hair at her temples was still damp from her play on the courts. It was plastered against the smooth skin in tiny curls.
"That is my car."
"Oh, they'll send somebody else up with it, Mrs. Courtney, I'm sure, because I'm only used to dealing with ladies." Again the wondering gasp and burst of giggles.
"Oh, he's a darling,"
Irene clapped her hands in applause, but Storm ignored her.
"My father will have you fired."
"Yes, he probably will," he agreed. Mark thought about that solemnly for a moment, and then he nodded and let out the clutch. He looked back in the mirror as he took the first bend in the driveway, and they were still standing in a group staring after him in their white dresses like a group of marble statues. "Nymphs Startled by Satyr" was a fitting title, he thought, and laughed with the reckless mood still on him.